This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. All along the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt and Brett here today. One Jeff Stein joins us here about 4:35 to talk national politics with him. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we got Don Samuels, who's going to be taking on Ilhan Omar in the DFL primary for the Minnesota 5 seat. We'll talk to him about that and his decision, why he's made the choice to do that. Brett, how are you today?
I'm all right. How about you?
Little Kilny out there. It's warm and windy, which is the case. Have you seen the movie Don't Look Up?
Oh, yeah.
You did? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Phenomenal film. And it really does a very good job of pegging the unwillingness of people in power to deal with bad things. Or even try, unless there's a profit margin that can be managed there, or they can spin it in a positive way. And it's a fantastic thing. To show you that this is not exactly based on fiction, that this is actually a true thing, we have to go to England. British meteorologist John Hammond issued a warning about this week's deadly heat wave. I don't know if you've seen what's going on in Europe. Just unbelievable.
A little warm there, yes.
100 degrees plus. I have friends who live in Scotland. They're saying we're on the beaches of Scotland in bikinis. And they're hot. It's too hot still up there. Now, that is a lot of really, really white flesh. I can't. Oh, my God. That is going as an albacore. Oh, my God. That's a human. You know, that sort of thing. But it is unbelievably brutal out there. And because many of these houses do not have air conditioning, they've already had hundreds of people in Spain and Portugal die. They're expecting hundreds, if not maybe even thousands, of people in England to die because this heat wave is going to stay there for a while. And the crazy part about especially the old British houses, they're designed to hold heat in. Because they're in that kind of – they're about up where Anchorage, Alaska is, you know, kind of on the coast there. They get colder winds, that sort of thing. So it's not a good combination. He was on GB News segment, but anchor Bev Turner's reaction was basically straight from the movie Don't Look Up. As she noted, what a nice day it was, downplaying the threat of what was going on. She says, I want to be happy about the weather, Turner says. I don't know whether something's happened to meteorologists to make you all a bit fantastic and harbingers of doom. Yeah. I know thousands of people are going to die and everything, but come on, people. Let's turn those frowns upside down, huh? Jesus. She also complained that every time I turned on, anyone's talking about the weather. They're saying that there's going to be tons of fatalities. But haven't we always had hot weather? This is a woman in England. Just as Hammond warned, the heat wave broke records, making the nation's hottest ever day with temperatures at 104 in England. Temperatures may not be normal for some parts of the U.S. this summer. However, they're so uncommon in U.K. that the infrastructure just wasn't built in mind. Fewer than 5% of homes have air conditioners. For example, high temperatures can also wreak havoc with roads, train tracks, and airport runways. I believe they actually had to shut down one of the airports over there because the runway melted. They have Colbert last night had it. They're covering some of the bridges with reflective foil to try to prevent them from, buckling and breaking.
You got to look at the bright side, though.
Come
according
on!
To this thing.
Yeah. It's a bright, sunshiny day. Oh, just watch out for the corpses. Come on. Wow. It's also been blamed for wildfires, disruptions of work, of school, and hundreds of deaths already. Of course, if you haven't seen Don't Look Up, there's a fantastic scene with Jennifer Lawrence where she goes on what is basically a kind of like a Good Morning America type of show. And they're like, oh, well, let's talk about this. And, of course, it has to do with a meteor coming and going to smack the earth. or a comet that's going to smack the Earth. And they're all like, oh, wow. Do you think there's aliens on the comet? He's like, you don't seem to understand. This isn't a happy story. It's a very good film. I definitely think that it definitely deserved to get nominated for an Oscar. I don't think it deserved to win, but it was pretty good. And some good acting across the board on that one.
I believe that's still on Netflix if you want to check it out.
Cate Blanchett's great in it. Who's the greatest actor?
Meryl Streep
is the president.
Oh, she's in it, yeah.
And then who plays her son? The Trump Jr.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's good. You go see that. It is. Or you can just watch. What is this? BGTV. GB News. GB News in England for basically a live action version of it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So there is a fantastic tweet thread. There's a lot of things we got to get to today, but there's this fantastic tweet thread that I wanted to make sure I read to everyone out there because it's by this guy, Paul Fairey, F-A-I-R-I-E, Paul Fairey. And he put this out here and it is just sensational. A lot of people have already liked it and retweeted it. A brief history of the term nobody wants to work anymore, because isn't that the snarky comment that we've all heard lately about, hey, you know, nobody wants to work anymore as unemployment's at record low levels. You know, so, you know, he makes this point. Now, he starts off, this is an article from this year, according to a new survey released by Tiny Pulse, 1 in 5 executive leaders agree with the statement, nobody wants to work. 1 in 5, 20%. Let's go back to 2014. This is an article. I don't know where it necessarily is coming from per se, but he says, what has happened to the work ethic in America? Nobody wants to work anymore. It has not always been this way. When I first started out as a teenager, I saw people work hard. This is 2014 is the response to that one. 2006, let's go back to that one. I can't believe the bad luck I've had in trying to find someone to do some needed home improvements. It almost seems like nobody wants to work anymore. And when they do work, they take no pride in what they do. How does one find a dependable worker? It's 2006. Let's go back to 1999. Nobody wants to work anymore. Cecil said they all want to do is work in front of a computer and make lots of money. Well, that sounds pretty good. How do you get that job? That sounds nice. So that's 1999. Let's go back to 1981, shall we? This is farming is my hobby now, but these rocks, I hired 2 boys to clear these rocks off this land this week, but they just fooled around. They didn't want to work anymore. Nobody wants to work anymore. That's 1981. 79. A disgruntled businessman. Nobody wants to work anymore. 1969. Last Sunday, the first of the programs dealt with how it feels to be poor, and the upcoming Sunday segment is called Nobody Wants to Work Anymore, 1969. 1952. I heard somebody say the other day that everybody was getting too darn lazy, and nobody wants to work anymore. That's the truth if I ever heard it. That's 1952. 1940. After mentioning the reduction of the $85,000 a year laundry bill for Wisconsin General Hospital by having the laundry done by Wappan prisoners, Governor Heil said that he wanted to lower taxes, but the trouble is everyone is on relief or on pension. Nobody wants to work anymore. That is 1940. 1937. Faced with a shortage of labor when unemployment is a widespread, peach orchardists in New York and Adams counties are complaining that nobody wants to work anymore. There is work, it is reported, for 15 to 25 peach pickers in every orchard in the 2 counties, but only 2 of 5 pickers are working. Blah, 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 blah. 1922. What is the cause of unemployment in hard times? The manufacturing businessmen say it's because nobody wants to work anymore. 1922. 1916. The article is titled, Nobody Wants to Work. What about vegetables? Has it been a good year for vegetables? The dealer has asked. Well, as near as I can find out, he answered, the reason for food scarcity is that nobody wants to work as hard as they used to. I asked a man who was in here the other day why he didn't raise more livestock and make more of his own butter. Women don't want to make any butter anymore. And then he had, well, if it's available in the store, have you used a churn? It's a pain in the butt. I'm with the women on this one. A little convenience. Nothing wrong with that. Hey, let's go to 1905. Labor is scarce, high, and very unreliable. Nobody wants to work anymore. Or actually, it says none wants to work for wages. That's what it says. That is 1905. It couldn't possibly. Oh, indeed it does. 1894. With all the mines of the country shut down by strikers, what will the poor editor do for coal next year? It's becoming apparent that nobody wants to work in these hard times. Okay, so what have we just learned, kids, is that this is just a recurring lie people say, especially when you look at unemployment in this country right now. Thanks, Joe. By the way, thank you, Joe Biden. What great unemployment numbers. He's really got unemployment down to a minimum. I think it's the record low for the last 60 years now. Just amazing. That's Joe Biden. Joe Biden did that. Can we get the sticker where they put on the gas pumps? He did that. Unemployment numbers, very low. People are wanting to work. It's just you guys pay crap wages and don't give benefits, and that's just that. And you want the old way. You want to pay $3 an hour, and you better work 70 hours a week. And then you're surprised that nobody wants my job. Well, I guess nobody wants to work anymore. Well, not for you, jackass. No, no one wants to work for you. And the reality is anytime I hear that line, nobody wants to work hard anymore, generally the people that say that are people who have never really worked a hard damn day in their lives. They're just people that are judgmental, who know they haven't worked a hard day, who just want to criticize everyone else. And scene. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming to you live on WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, the Shaw and Waukesha, Milwaukee area. Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus. And, of course, on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Wednesday. Jeff Stein joining us here in just a little bit. Nobody wants to. Brett, why doesn't anybody want to work anymore?
Like they used to work, exactly.
Well, can I just say this? Have the people that said that, have they tried vacation? I mean, vacation's great, man. Free food, and I can live rent-free someplace. That sounds wonderful. How do I get that gig? That's great. It's like one of those jobs where you go out to a lighthouse and you get to stay there. They give you food. You just got to stay in a lighthouse by yourself for like 6 months and just walk up and down the shore and make sure, you know, no wrecks come in. You know, that sort of thing. Okay. look at me, I'm working. So I'm dead serious too. Anytime I ever hear someone say this, it's like when people brag about sex. Okay, just stop. Okay, no. You know, you're not fooling anyone. Just stop. Okay, just stop. Same thing. Anytime you hear it's like, why doesn't anybody want to work a hard day in your life? Oh, were you at the country club earlier today? Oh, I'm so sorry. Tell me once again about hard work. is your cook getting dinner ready for you tonight? Oh, wow. Sweating to the oldies there, executive guy. Yeah, no, people are tired of working for your crap wages and for your crap benefits. That's it. 100%. 952-946-6205. And I want to take one other quick moment here and talk about that story out of Indianapolis of the mall shooter. Because I think I have to do a bit of an intervention here after all the conservatives are cheering with great joy that finally, the good guy with the gun stopped a bad guy with a gun. And there it is. There it is. Success. As Republicans define it. Now, mind you, success as Republicans define it is 3 dead, 2 injured, and hundreds probably, you know, scarred mentally for life, if not for, you know, for a few years, if not for life. But still, that apparently is success. Once again, three dead people is success for Republicans. Now, mind you, I could make an argument that, okay, now, first of all, one thing about the guy that took out the shooter, I thought there are signs posted that they prefer you do not carry guns in Indiana, but apparently Indiana is got this weird law that says that even if you're a private business, that a person in, even if you have posted you can't carry guns into my private business, an individual can still carry a gun into someone else's private business. And unless the other individual sees the gun that is perfectly legitimate, that's perfectly legal, and if they see the gun, they have to ask nicely for the person to leave versus, you know, just saying, you know, getting out. So technically, this guy didn't break the law, although the mall has a policy of not having people carry guns in there. I think that it was, I, it's a tough call. You have to make that call. The reality is, and I've gone back to when they had the Charlie Hebdo shooting. There is that was the magazine in Europe where the guys came in, the terrorists came in and shot the place up. A conservative pro-gun group of kooks down in Texas tried to rebuild the Charlie Hebdo office space and then pretended they were all in the office. And tried to show that if they had guns at the Charlie Hebdo office, if all the workers for Charlie Hebdo had guns, they would have been able to stop the terrorist shooter. The reality is they kept running the scenario. At no point did anyone come on out alive outside of the one guy who ran for the exit. That guy who ran for the exit lived. And to their credit, I guess, they did come on out there and were very honest about it, and they said that we could not figure out a way, so not necessarily, you know, kind of a strike against guns make you safer, that's for sure. But the reality is I've had to talk to my kids because we are living in a god-awful timeline about what happens when gunfire starts up. I had to talk to my daughter the other day about if you're in the parade and she's in the marching band and all of a sudden starts shooting, get off the street, find a door and get into it right away. That's all you can do. Just get out of the way. My son asked me when I first talked to him about this, and I think it was about 16. He said, what if I can stop him? I said, son, you'd better be sure. Because you're not playing, you know, timeout, I need a do-over. You'd better be sure. My son, who was at the Highland Park shooting down there at that parade on the 4th of July, did exactly what I told him to do. When they had thought they'd heard gunfire, they thought that when the crowd started running, it was a car coming down the street. When it became clear fairly quickly that it wasn't a car, my son said, everyone, we need to get off the street now. He did the right thing. This shooter took the chance, and he did stop this guy after he had killed three people. He'd killed three people. He had injured two. He had, once again, mentally scarred probably hundreds of people. But he did indeed stop them. And one of the first things that always happens is, oh, he was going to kill 1,000 more. Thank God for the shooter. I want to stop you. Even with a good guy with a gun sitting right there with a gun ready to fire, even though he was there, he couldn't stop him in time. Three people died. Two people were injured. He could not stop him in time. You think, Republicans, this is your great success story. It's not. What does it prove? That you can't stop a crazed man with a weapon that is designed to kill as many human beings as quickly as possible. That even in your best case scenario, you still are going to have three dead, two injured. That is your best case scenario. Now let's go apply this to a school classroom. Pick the three kids that are going to get shot. You tell me which three kids in that classroom and talk about high-fiving and applauding. Yeah, we did it. If three dead is your sign of success, then may God have mercy on all of us, because that's not a success. Really quick, because we got to get to the break here. Mark in the SAC joining us. Welcome on in, Mark.
Hey, thanks, brother. Yeah, well, out in the Deerwoods, it used to be limited to four rounds in the magazine, you know, and what they manufactured for the old semi-autos. I always had a bolt action or a pump action. It was like two or three, you know, three rounds in the magazine. But, I mean, it's three rounds in the magazine when you're duck hunting. I mean, that... Or two rounds in the magazine, because you're limited to three shots. I mean, I don't see any reason they can't put a... this good guy with a gun thing. I mean, it just, things could have gone so badly.
Well, and Mark, I'd got to step in on you there, because I'm at the end of this segment. I got Jeff Stein coming in. But you're right. It is absolutely right. There is no celebrating, even with your best case scenario. Let's take a break, Jeff Stein, when we come back.
Jeff.
The Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. He's a noted author. You can find his books at all your favorite bookstores, as well as totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report and the Iowa Politics Report come to us from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff is shockingly in-house today. If you're watching the live stream video, you get to see Jeff not calling us from an Arby's drive-thru. Hey, Jeff.
I was tempted to just jump on the median of some interstate so we could keep the on-the-road theme going for the new Wisconsin audience, but it's like 500 degrees outside, So I decided I'll just stay in my studio here. How are you?
All righty. When you get the chance, you got to go down to Kirk's hometown, just south of you there, and do the show from the Kirk Captain Kirk hometown.
Oh, Riverside, Iowa.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. They have a monument to his future birth.
It is that's okay. You know, all right. It'd be cool if do they have like a statue of the Enterprise or anything there or no?
Okay, funny story. They wanted to,
okay,
but because of copyright reasons,
no.
Whoever had the copyright, I don't know if it was the movie company, whatever, they wanted $1 zillion. And the only person I know with that kind of money is Matt McNeil. So they put together something that sort of looks like the Enterprise, but not close enough to counter. Yeah.
Oh, is it signed Billy? It's not. No.
You know what date they picked? See, the story here is that Riverside, Iowa decided it would be the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk.
Tiberius Kirk, yes.
Yes, I almost said it, but I don't know this stuff, and I was afraid I was going to commit a major faux pas, because in one of the books or movies, it says that he was born in the state of Iowa. So Riverside just claimed it, and they picked the birth date. I don't know if it's the year 2500 and whatever, but they picked March 22nd because that's William Shatner's actual birthday.
Ah, so it's if things come to fruition, take a look at it. Look at the communicators they have, and look at our cell phones now. So, you know, it's not too far from the finish at this point. But, you know, if it does come to fruition, let us know when James T. gets born down there.
I'm not sure you or I will be alive.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure, considering the way things are going at this point. Yeah, I would agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
You're suggesting next week might be, you know, kind of don't put money on it. Is that what you're saying?
England's on fire. Have you seen this? I think the entire country of England's on fire.
Yeah, I have, actually.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, I'm not a big Celsius guy, but it sounds hot. Yeah, you know,
40 is 104. 104. Oh. Wow. Hey, speaking of... things on fire. Let's go to the Secret Service first. This is really a breach of trust. I mean, the Secret Service is an organization started after Lincoln was assassinated. They basically created a force to follow around presidents to make sure the president stays safe. They're supposed to be above politics. They're supposed to be above any individual in office. They serve the country. They do not serve any individual. The story that came on out that mysteriously the text messages for the Secret Service from the 5th and 6th of January in 2021 have all of a sudden mysteriously disappeared. And every excuse they give, it seems to get more and more ludicrous as the argument goes, because of course you would want to keep the Secret Service notes from that time. Why you would ever think getting rid of them was a good idea in the first place is ludicrous. But it also brings up two stories which kind of got lost during that whole time. December 30th, 2020, Biden announces, his transition team announces, they're completely switching out the entire contingency of Secret Service agents. This usually doesn't happen, and it was a very unique move. They brought in Secret Service agents that had guarded Biden when he was vice president and made that the new team. Even so, 2 days before he was sworn in, there was still a purging. I believe it was three agents were taken off his task force and replaced. There was never any answer of why, but I think we're starting to get the idea that because Trump seemed to try to recruit the Secret Service as his own basically like version of Blackwater, I think that there has been some compromised integrity by for sure within the Secret Service. Your thoughts?
It is entirely possible. It's easy to dismiss all of this, and certainly at the time, Matt, by saying Biden hated Trump so much, anything that had to do with Trump, he was getting rid of. And that's been the mission, you know, whether it's policy, whether it's protocol, whether it's Secret Service agents. Okay, you know, you could kind of go along with that at the time. Here's the thing, that the one excuse that I heard that doesn't necessarily throw me, it doesn't cause me any alarm, is that they were getting new phones or a new phone system or whatever, and they were supposed to back everything up to a certain server before the switchover happened. And if they had not done that, then they would lose the messages. And I have whined to you on this radio program before about getting a new phone. And they said, do you want to transfer your stuff from your old phone to your new phone? And I said, sure, go ahead. I'm not paying for it. The company's paying for it. Go ahead. And what happened was they brought in data from 2015 and 2016, but nothing after that. So the point is that when you do this kind of transfer stuff, you know, many of us have had a situation where the data transfer was not perfect. So if, in fact, that little thing I heard about, they were supposed to do this backup, they didn't do it, they lost the data, I've lived it. Okay, so I can see that.
But when you put it
in the context of everything else, though, it starts getting fishy. It's dog ate my homework stuff, isn't it?
Well, it's okay. First of all, the story was, we just purged all the messages, but they didn't purge anything from January 4th, just from January 5th and 6th, which didn't make any sense. Then they came back with the software update story. Here's your problem. You're right. Occasionally it does happen. And would I be surprised if one Secret Service agent, even though they were told twice to make sure they store everything from the 5th and the 6th, they were told twice to do that. Could there have been one Secret Service agent like, I forgot to back this up. Undoubtedly. I couldn't buy that.
Or one team. Shift. You know, these three or four guys, whatever it was.
Now you're starting to get into more ludicrous territory there, because because if I send a text to you, mm-hmm. all right, well, if I purge my phone, you still have the text. The problem here is this, is that apparently the phone that sent the text doesn't have it. The phone that received the text doesn't have it. And I guarantee it's more than just three or four man teams we're talking here. There seems to have been a coordinated effort to destroy evidence by the Secret Service. And once again, this is where this gets earth-shaking. And I think that the people are starting to realize how dangerous – this is not supposed to be an agency that this is a problem with. This is supposed to not be political. There's not supposed to be questions there. And there have been plenty of times where Secret Service agents have come up and had to describe what they saw, because they don't serve any individual president. They serve the country. And that seems to have been compromised at this point.
No, and all I was saying was I'd even give you two or three guys in the same shift all forgot the same time, but not as widespread as what is being suggested here. Because, again, if they're texting with each other, well, where's the other half of it? Now, I have no alibi for it. I don't know if their phones have some super secret level of hack prevention. You know, I mean, we talk about secure phones and this sort of thing. That's why they didn't want Obama to have his cell phone in the White House. They didn't want Trump to have a cell phone in the White House because of security issues. But no one has said that. You see, I just said that might be a possibility, right? Because I don't know. Nobody has said that. And wouldn't you think that'd be the first defense to say our phones don't work like all these other phones do? Otherwise, it opens the door to the very thing that you're mentioning. And stuff that we used to think not very long ago was absolutely ludicrous, beyond the pale, no way that would ever happen, that is far stranger than any fiction. Well, now it's plausible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. There's the one guy that was on – this was, I think, the first time this ever happened. There was a member of Trump's Secret Service team that actually became part of his administration. And a lot of people are starting to point fingers at him. And now, and I can't remember his name, and I can't remember the position he had within the administration. But it does seem like that there was a lot of communication between the Secret Service and him as a member of the administration, which, once again, there are protocols, there's discussion topics. We also have, as well, tomorrow night, apparently one of the witnesses that's going to testify is an individual who's going to back up the Trump tried to grab the wheel story at in the car to go up to the Capitol. And so now all of a sudden you've got multiple people sharing the same story and the Secret Service saying, oh, I have no idea. Phones, what are they? You know, and so I, you know, it really is starting to look really like the Secret Service itself, probably by design, has been compromised, and that there has to be a full cleaning. Because reality is, we need the Secret Service. They do a lot of good. It's not – we shouldn't just – as conservatives will go after the FBI and they go after other agencies. The reality is these agencies do a lot of good. We can't just get rid of them. But at the same time, there's clearly a major problem here.
Okay, a couple of things. One, here's what I can't square.
Yeah.
The grabbing the wheel story.
Yes.
Why would – if you're a secret – assume for the sake of argument it's true. Okay. Why would the Secret Service want to hide texts related to that?
That's a good point.
So in other words, I understand the idea of purging things. You know, and you don't want certain things to be seen. Is it because they don't want to be seen as having allowed the president that close of access to the steering wheel? I mean, I just don't know. I'm just saying there's few things that are just a little wonky about it.
And if I can just really quick, isn't the point – you're a lawyer too. Isn't the point here is if I'm a Secret Service agent, I want to keep all those texts just because, well, yeah, he tried to grab the steering wheel, so I want to make sure I've got culpability here.
Well, I make sure that I've documented it.
Exactly.
So if it ever blows back on me, absolutely.
Yeah.
You would think so. And that's what makes this whole thing – to where potentially, to your point, it's higher up. Now, two things beyond that. I want to say that originally when Trump took office, he hired as his chief of security one of his old bodyguards.
Yes, he did.
And right. And that then became the conflict of who's running the show. Is it the Secret Service or is it Trump's security? And you know, and that didn't last long and didn't play out. But you've got the current head of the Secret Service, isn't this the guy who decided to, quote unquote, retire from government service and now is going to work for TikTok? I'm trying to figure out how that kind of thing just happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're free to take any job you want, et cetera. But when you start getting into this layer of data manipulation and text being deleted and favoritism one way or another, it's like, oh, sure, the guy running the agency bails to go work for TikTok, which was the sworn enemy of the Trump administration. Again, I have no idea.
So and this also, by the way, your point about why would you get them? I mean, that's your credibility there. You have the ability to defend yourself in a court case if that's the case. Yeah. But on top of that, too, the fact that we're dealing with so many different phones, so many different servers, so many different places, this can't be. It was like when after all the disk drives got erased after the George W. Bush's term in office, I said to yourself, do you understand how that must have been a team running for 3 months, having to find all the emails from the sent inboxes to the caches on the computer, to the caches on the routers, to the computers that received the email, to the caches on those. I mean, this is not just, oops, I hit control, delete, on a computer and it did this. You have to go do this. And once again, it has to – this for all these to have disappeared, there had to been an incredibly coordinated effort.
And I'm sure people on the right side of the spectrum are now screaming at the Facebook screen or at the radio, what about Hillary and the emails? The bottom line on everything is well, what I'm saying is the stuff isn't accidental anymore, right? I mean, again, the fact that you could take – phone contacts and texts that I deleted from my phone. I did not sync it up with the big cell phone company that begins with a V, which is the provider. I didn't sync any of this up, and they're pulling data back from 6 years ago for a new phone? I mean, clearly, you have to do a lot to get rid of this stuff.
Yes, you do. You do.
So, I mean, when you know, the schmo like me goes to the mall kiosk to get his phone updated, and they can retrieve everything, but you're telling me you can't find text from 2 years ago or what? I mean, this is where it gets fanciful, does it not?
It absolutely does. Now, we got to take a break and come back. And by the way, the difference between Hillary Clinton and what's going on now is that was all fake because they investigated that and couldn't find anything. But the reality—
I had to just put the bait in the trap.
Yeah, you did. How dare you, Jeff Stein? All right. Well,
apparently it was quite easy. That's how.
Obviously, we'll get more answers on this question tomorrow night with the January 6th hearing. When we come on back, can the Republicans actually campaign in the age of the overturning of Roe v. Wade? We'll talk to Jeff about that when we do come back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming to you live on Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM in the Shaw and Waukesha, Milwaukee area, and AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, speaking of baiting the hook, just to FYI for you, Star Trek The Voyage Home, Kirk does mention he is from Iowa. FYI.
You need no better source than that, and I already sent you the link. The birth date is 2228. So I don't plan to be here.
I might be preoccupied. I don't like parties. Okay, we got to talk a little bit about the overturning of Roe v. Wade, because in Minnesota here and across the country, Republicans are finding themselves in a trap. And you and I talked about this. On one side, they want to say, you know, isn't this wonderful? We're going to go to extremes. No exceptions for rape. No exceptions for incest. No exceptions for the life of the mother, which, by the way, life of the mother, that's from there was an organization, the Minnesota Republican Attorney General candidate. That was their stance. Matt Burke, the former Viking football player who's now the lieutenant governor candidate in Minnesota, just got caught basically saying that, you know, women going in the workforce or having careers is part of the reasons why abortions, remain. I'm paraphrasing and probably, badly, but you can find the story now pretty much everywhere. The reality is that for the vast majority of people, 61% in Fox News, their latest poll, want Roe v. Wade to stand. Up to 70% I've seen in other polls. The Republicans are in a trap. They either go on out there, try to appease their base, saying, isn't this great? We're wonderful. We're going to keep pushing for fewer and fewer exceptions for abortion. Or we're going to go down this path of basically trying to keep quiet. Needless to say, when you have Republicans who are in completely safe districts where there is no concern that they're going to lose, there's where the problem comes in, because those guys don't mind being that extremist far right. And it puts the rest of these parties on edge. Your thoughts? Can the Republicans campaign at all with Roe v. Wade and win in general elections across the country?
They can if they thread the needle, but it has to be done carefully. I mean, first of all, both sides have made a fortune fundraising on this issue over time. Republicans saying we need the money to get it changed. Democrats saying we need the money to preserve. And now the roles are flipped. In essence. And so it's one of these situations, and it's such an important issue for so many people. I don't want to diminish it. But for Republicans, it's sort of like the old story about a dog chasing a car. What does he do when he catches the car?
Exactly.
He doesn't know what to do with it. Okay. And this is one of the things. Now, I'm coming to you from the state of Iowa. Last week, I did the show from Des Moines, the state capital. I had done a quick interview with the governor that afternoon, and I flat out asked, are you going to call the legislature back? Now, here's the threading the needle part, because she could call the legislature back to pass some law before the election. The answer was no, I don't foresee that happening. Let's see how other cases shake out, etc. If you want to thread the needle, what you say is you elect us as Republicans and we'll take care of business. And let the voters interpret that however they want. All right. The trick is if you actually take action beforehand, then it's a track record that, that can be used against you. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't use that once, right? If you're the Republicans and you say to your base, we're going to keep taking advantage of a post-Dobbs decision world, but you're going to have to elect us and then we'll do the right thing. Well, they're going to have a problem the next election.
DeSantis.
So you take it once, but you have to be careful.
DeSantis is the other option. I mean, he has basically gone, you know, radio silence on this issue. And right. he knows in Florida that's a very tough issue for him to try to even navigate at all. And so there's that option. Okay, if I was – I mean, I don't want to give Republicans hints, but if I was a Republican, I would say, okay, here's
not
the deal.
Listening. They're okay. Not listening to you.
Yeah, okay. Here's what – yeah, actually, you'd be surprised. Okay, you'd be surprised.
That's fair. It's fair.
Here's what I do. I would say we're going to cover – for the last trimester of women pregnancy, we'll cover your health care costs. We'll make sure that those are covered. We'll cover health care costs for the baby for the first year and a half. We'll make sure you – you know, we'll expand WIC and make sure their food programs are there if you need it. You all of a sudden say, hey, we understand this is the case, but we're going to take away some of the burdens that are, have always been a stigma for people that when they've considered abortion. So we're going to address those things. Look at us. We're the new Republican Party. We are against abortion, but we are here for social programs that are going to help these people. Instead, they all seem to be, if you suggest this, you're a Republican, you know, because once again, at the end of the day, tax dollars are not something you spend. And so it's a trap that they are stuck in because there really is no argument they can make outside of trying their best to just sew their lips shut.
Well, it is something I think we've talked about it. It's been quite a while, but those on the left are quite appropriately saying to those on the right. I always hate using those phrases, but for the sake of this illustration, folks on the left are saying to the folks on the right, all right, fine. Where's the support for these young people? Typically young people who wind up terminating a pregnancy because they believe there are no options. If you're going to force pregnancy to term, then you're going to have some level of infrastructure, social services, et cetera, and it can't just be day of because a child is a, quote, 18-year commitment, and you're the father of three, and I'm guessing it didn't just stop when the oldest turned 18. Okay, so this is, you know, you've got to have the foundation there. And to your point, they caught the car. Now what do they do with it?
Mm-hmm. It is a nightmare for them because they have voted against expanding of social safety net programs already. Mm-hmm. And once again, when you look at the people that really appeal to the no exceptions for life of the mother, rape or incest, that is only 7%. And I don't, you know, if they keep pushing that narrative, which right now they can't get out of their own damn way, this is going to have a major impact on this election. This is going to have a major impact on this election.
Well, this is why, you know, we've talked previously about the fact that those on the left who are angry about the overturning of Roe versus Wade are going to have to maintain and expand upon that anger for productivity in November. And it's hard to stay that mad for that long a period of time. Not that it can't be done. It's just hard to do. But never doubt the Republicans' attempt to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. All right. There's all this talk about red wave this, red wave that. If anybody can get in the way of what looks like, a nice straight road, it's been proven to be a fractured Republican Party that, frankly, is more fractured now than ever between the Trump element, the not Trump element. They're not going to agree on virtually anything. And they're going to pay hell when it comes time to govern if they do have the majority in Congress come January. But again, counting these chickens before they're hatched, I mean, Kevin McCarthy going in measuring for new drapes in the Speaker's office seems to be a bit premature, especially with his predisposition for messing things up royally within his own party.
And they're just eager to get gay marriage struck down. They're eager to get contraception struck down. And I just, you know, you just kind of say to yourselves, you know, all right, fine. I mean, because that's what, like you said, that will keep fires burning for the Democrats all the way through November and for election cycles.
What do you think about the fact that 47 Republicans in the House voted for the defense of marriage bill?
I think it's basically my guess is going to be most of those are in toss up districts where it's going to be tough for them to hold if they don't do that. So,
yeah, I look at it as they took that step to be the counter to their pro life anti-abortion stance. It's sort of like, well, I'll just toss this one out there.
We are
to satisfy the other side.
We're done. Jeff Stein will spotlight this this interview, the Iowa Politics Report, as well. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you next week. We'll be back. Hour two up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Hour number two of the show here. Good to be with you today, Matt and Brett. A little bit later on, our Democrat of the day is going to be Don Samuels. He is running to challenge Ilhan Omar in the primary in the Minnesota 5th District. We'll talk to him about his campaign, what he wanted to champion, and you know, standard stuff here. And by the way, once again, I want to make sure I say this. We and some of these races, we'll interview everyone, for goodness sakes. If we bring in someone that's a primary, I'd love to have Ilhan Omar on my show and talk to her about this. This is not about playing favorites. This is about basically trying to interview the big races, especially the primary races as we get closer. We talked about this yesterday with the Hennepin County Attorney's race. That's a huge race. And generally, I'm not talking too many smaller races, but that one has got such impact there that we basically opened it up to talk to the Hennepin County Attorney candidates. And that's not a political race. So that's not a Democrat of the day. That's just a candidate of the day. And we're hopefully, it sounds like I might be able to get Ryan Winkler on in here before too long as well to talk to him about his campaign before the primary. But, you know, yeah, obviously it's one of those things we're going to try to get in, especially on the contested primaries. We'll try to get people on to talk about that. Don Samuels will join us here about 4:35. Aquatennial, you're going to do any of that this year?
Not that I have planned. Sounds fun, though.
It's always fun, man. Mm-hmm. It's a great parade. They got that going on tonight. There's going to be a significant presence of law enforcement at the Aquatennial Festival, which gets underway today. The city issued a statement ahead of the four-day event's kickoff saying it had collaborated with Aquatennial organizers and other law enforcement on its safety plan, which is designed to create an environment where everyone can enjoy a safe and fun experience. The plan will see Minneapolis Police Department have major presence at the events, which include typical patrols along with bike patrols, mounted patrols, canine units. Also involved in law enforcement logistics will be the Fire Department, Office of Emergency Management, Minneapolis 911, and the Office of Violence Prevention. It comes after prominent incidents of disorder on the 4th of July at large groups fireworks at people in buildings, as well as injuring multiple people at Boom Island Park. There's also heightened concern after what had happened in Highland Park, Illinois, there. So obviously they're taking it very seriously. And yeah, you know, they'll find the knuckleheads. As a matter of fact, if I can, you know, just transition in, an arrest has been made in the fireworks incident at the movie theater last week. The Eagan Police Department has confirmed it has arrested an 18-year-old moron in connection with the incident who is currently being held at the Dakota County Jail. Last Tuesday evening at the Imagine Theater, a firework was lit off during a showing, prompting an evacuation and causing injuries. On July 12th at 8:24 p.m., Eagan police officers responded to the theater on Cliff Road of a report of a firework being set off in the theater. Police responded and assisted paramedics in treating and releasing several people for minor injuries. The preliminary investigation shows the suspect lit a large firework, tossed it into the theater before leaving. Social media video shows large explosion in the middle of the theater. They basically so they've made the arrest here, and we've said this before, and I'll say this again: there are cameras everywhere, idiots. So sure, and we talked about this with Edina, where they've got the racist things that were written on the tennis courts over at Edina, right? Edina, you're gonna go do that in Edina? Probably there's drones flying over that town all the time, basically photographing everything. They'll find you. They will. But even if you're not in Edina, they'll find you. They will. Every building has cameras on it, every inside and outside. You have traffic cameras. And one of the things I thought was really interesting, when they had the horrible incident of the guy that got shot on the roadway on 169, they were able to use the traffic cameras. They tracked them all the way back. They went back because they can rewind those, and they can find your car. And you think to yourself, well, I'll stay off the highways. Funny story. A lot of the secondary roads now have cameras on them. So it's almost impossible for you to basically go anywhere without being seen where you go. And I know that's kind of a little bit of, you know, big brother watching you. But that's what it is. And so you can say anything you like. You can do this sort of thing. They're going to find you. They're going to arrest you. And so, and my guess is you're 18 years old. You're going to jail for this, you idiot. I don't think you're going to get probation. for chucking a firework into a movie theater?
Yeah, I think that's going to be some risk to public, whatever you would call it, public health, because clearly that's someone can get hurt during that if you're throwing fireworks in a crowded theater.
Attempted arson?
Yeah.
Attempted, you know, damage with intent to cause bodily harm? Yeah, we could run through a bunch. And yeah, you're going to jail, dude. Maybe not for a long time, but you're going to go to jail. So glad they caught that guy. I mean, let's be careful out there. And if you know of people who want to do knuckleheaded things, well, then you might want to stop them because they're going to get arrested and they are going to go to jail. And that is just the way that it happens. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So, I got to talk a little bit about the Burke thing. And I'm going to bring this up because finally, the Star Tribune, the main newspaper of the state, finally, after multiple national outlets had picked up the story, had pretty much everyone else locally had reported on the story, at noon today, finally put out this on this. Minnesota Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate Matt Burke is under fire for recent comments he made about abortion and women on the day the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Speaking at the National Right to Life Conference in Georgia last month, Burke said American culture loudly but also stealthily promotes abortion by telling women they should have they look a certain way, that they should have careers. Wow. Burke said abortion rights activists who oppose bans that do not have exceptions for victims of rape or incest always wanted to go with the rape card. Wow. An abortion, Burke said, is not going to heal the wounds of that, says you, but okay, a guy that can't get pregnant if he gets raped. Ugh. Two things are not going to make it right. Two wrongs are not going to make it right, said Burke, a former Viking center who's running for the GOP as the endorsed lieutenant governor candidate for Scott Jensen. Burke also likened abortion opponents' fight to outlaw the procedure to the battle to end slavery. And then he made a joke on whether women should have the right to drive. Wow. You know, women used to not be able to vote in our country. Now we let them drive, Burke said. I mean, I have three teenage daughters that drive. I don't know if that's good law or not. Just kidding. Sorry. Just kidding. Kidding to all the women out there. Oh, if you just look past that, all the rest of the misogyny of this entire speech, that doesn't look too creepy. But the fact that you said that is probably the fourth or fifth most offensive misogynistic thing you said in that speech. Well, you know, Jensen and Burke. Excuse me. Let me go to Democratic Governor Tim Walz's campaign released a video of Burke's speech this week at a press conference on Tuesday with Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. They condemned Burke's comments as disrespectful towards survivors. Jensen is choosing a running mate who does not trust or respect women, Flanagan said. A woman's choice to have a career, much like her decision on whether to have a child, is none of Matt Burke's business. Amen, girlfriend. Jensen and Burke issued a joint statement in response to Flanagan's press conference, calling Walz and Flanagan ticket a single-issue campaign. Okay, can I just say this? If the issue is a bunch of white guys trying to take over the decision-making process for women in this country on their own personal health care, it's a pretty big damn issue, wouldn't you say there, Scott and Matt? It sure seems like it's a pretty big freaking decision. So, yeah, they might just be a one-issue candidate. But considering how obnoxious the conservatives of this country have gotten by basically saying things like, oh, women shouldn't have the right to make their own health care choices. Oh, don't play the rape card. And what was that again about women shouldn't have careers, jackass? Oh, yeah. It is, because it's a pretty big freaking issue, wouldn't you say? I would say. God, this one video alone might be enough to cost Jen. I mean, there's a lot working against them. Let's be honest with you. They're, you know, that's a clown car brigade on the Republican side this year. But this one issue might have just cost him the election. And I have no problem saying that. You're going to go out there into the tertiary suburbs. Forget about Minneapolis. Forget about liberal bastions like Hopkins and Bloomington and stuff like that. You're going to go on out to places like Prior Lake and Champlin. You're going to go up to Monticello. You're going to go over to Ham Lake. You're going to go over to Stillwater. And the message you're going to be there is, hey, chickie-poos, your careers are basically the reason why abortions are out of control, you know? Implying pretty strongly. Now, once again, I just paraphrased. But the implication is pretty strong. Once women started working, abortions became a necessity, so maybe the women shouldn't have to work. Or that people who are raped are playing the rape card. Wow. Maybe, I don't know, I don't think you're going to win those districts. I will say definitively in 24 hours, the female vote for Jensen and Burke has at best fallen, I'm going to take a guess, 10 points. I'm going to take a guess, 10 points in even conservative districts. This is why I brought this up with Stein. You guys can't help yourselves. And this is going to be, you know, it would be by far the best strategy you could have is to basically ignore the subject or not talk about it, period, at all. But you guys can't help yourself. You want to spike the football. You want to talk about how this is only the beginning. Then on top of it, you got conservatives nationwide who are talking about getting rid of gay marriage now under the same argument that they got rid of Roe v. Wade, that they're talking about getting rid of contraception under the same argument that they got rid of Roe v. Wade. And it's, yeah, we've already had people say, you know what? Maybe it's time to look at the Loving case, Loving versus Virginia, which is interracial marriage. That case should be revisited. And of course, the return of the sodomy laws, where there are Republicans right now in this country who want to create bedroom cops to be able to kick open your door. And if you are having an unapproved type of sex with a person who may or may not be a person you're approved to have sex with, you will be arrested in your own private residence. That is what some Republicans want to do right now. And so you can sit there and say, oh, this is a one-issue thing. Yeah, people's freedoms. It is kind of a one-issue thing. And you guys are absolutely destroying them. So, first of all, Burke, you're a moron, dude. Seriously. You are a moron. Frankenstein would be like, not that stupid. He said, what? I know fire bad, but I'm not a moron. I'm not saying anything like that, for goodness sakes. Fire bad. Right now, without a doubt in my mind, there's probably a big meeting going on at the Minnesota GOP where they're going to have some – they've got their binders full of women. And they're going to have find some venue where they can have a press conference photo op with Burke standing with a whole bunch of women. Looks like, how can he be against women? Look, he's near them. They've tolerated his existence for 20 minutes so you can get a few photos. How is he against women? And we should not skip past Schultz's association with the organization who says, what was the organization's stance, was that there was never, ever a legitimate medical reason for an abortion? Holy God, man. That seems a little extreme. It seems like we know where they're going here. So when these Republicans sit out there and say, hey, we're not going to mess with anything. We're not going to, they're lying. This is the beginning. Minnesota is a bastion, an oasis in a conservative part of the country where you do still have rights as a woman in this state, at least, to control your own damn body, as it should be. And the Republicans, if they get in there, will do everything in their power to stop it. And then they'll go after contraception, and then they'll go after gay marriage, and then they'll go after interracial marriage. They'll go after what kind of sex you're having with and who you can have it with. That is who they are. And they'll sit there and they'll say, I mean, today there was a vote on the gay marriage, or yesterday, and I'll get back to this here in just a little bit, but they're all there saying, what was it? They said they're voting against it because it's a political game by Democrats. No, it's not. That's what you guys said when people said, oh, we should be concerned about Roe v. Wade, and they're trying to codify that into law. And you guys sat there and said, you're just playing politics. You're just playing politics. That's all you're doing. You're playing politics. And look what happened. And now all of a sudden, we're trying to pass this law, and they're, you're just playing politics. You're just playing politics. And then when they go after contraception, we try to codify that. You're just playing politics. You're just playing politics. And then they go after interracial marriage. You're just playing politics. You're just playing politics. And then they'll go after what kind of sex you can have in your private residence with whomever you want. And they'll say, you're just playing politics. And then they'll pass them all, because you know what? They already know they're going to do that. They already know that's their end game. They're just trying desperately now to keep it quiet. And then there's Matt Burke. 9529.
Don't associate me with him anymore. Firebad.
9529466205. He's lost the Frankenstein vote, man. Oh, no, not that. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Oh, I got more people to throw under the bus, starting with Stubby. I'll get to him in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So, yeah, the House on Tuesday passed a bill to protect same-sex marriage in a federal law amid fears that it may be in danger following the U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. Now, I should mention, I don't know if you heard Clarence Thomas and Justice Alito after that ruling, but they were like, bring all that stuff back up here. Bring all that stuff back up here. We'll overturn it in a heartbeat. That was their mentality. We all heard that, right? I heard that. Thomas especially. Just giddy. Like, yay, we get to overturn all these things so my hate can rage on. I know it will be gutsy if Clarence Thomas overturns Loving versus Virginia, the law that basically, outlawed, the bans against interracial marriage, considering he is in an interracial marriage. But you want to know the truth? I wouldn't be surprised if Clarence Thomas ruled against it.
They could thread the needle somehow and say some legal protection. Well, it doesn't apply to Supreme Court justices.
That's per state. I mean, I make sure I live in a state, but I mean, if other state doesn't want to do it, why am I to stop the racism? Yeah, that's going to be it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. There clearly is a need to do this, to codify right to contraception, right to interracial marriage, right to gay marriage, right to an abortion into federal law, because the Supreme Court is going on the warpath to basically dismantle all this stuff, and they're bragging about it. They had a vote to basically protect same-sex marriage. It did pass the House, 167 to 157. Every Democrat voted in favor of it. 47 of the 211 House GOP members supported the bill. Now, I will give Tom Emmer credit. Emmer was one of the people that voted for that bill. Now, I'm not sure if he did that for a procedural reason, but he did indeed vote for it. So, good for him. Occasionally the blind pig finds a truffle. Several House GOP leaders voted against the measure, including House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Minority Whip Steve Scalise. They said it was a political game by Democrats when, once again, it's clearly not a game. This is basically a reaction to the threats being made against it. Democrats cited threats to same-sex marriage as suggested by Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who urged justices to re-examine the issue in light of the court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade's protection on of abortion rights. Several GOP senators also have called the 2015 Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage wrongly decided. Same-sex marriage is broadly popular in America. Last month, Gallup poll found a record high of 71% of Americans supported, including the majority of Republicans. But it doesn't stop them, Because once again, this is an ideological crusade by zealots to basically, you know, turn this country back to a white male Christian country where the domination – they basically dominate. Now, I will mention – now, I don't think it's a surprise that Michelle Fischbach voted against the bill. I mean, I've been to the 7th District. It's just a smidge conservative up there. And, yeah. Pete Stauber voted against the bill. Stubby, up in the Minnesota 8, he voted against the bill. He voted against the bill to basically preserve gay marriage. So I think you can see that Pete Stauber is clearly one of these extremists. By the way, Liz Olson's running up against him up there. We need to get everyone up from the freaking Twin Cities up into the Minnesota 8th District and flip that district, because Stauber is a pariah of freaking hate up there. He won't protect gay marriage. He's going to go after women's rights. He's not going to allow, it doesn't sound like he's going to allow, rape victims or victims of incest, or when the life of the mother is in jeopardy. For them to even, that his world, it sounds like, is going to be somewhere all those things are banned. And then comes contraception. And then comes interracial marriage. And then comes what kind of sex you're having in your own private residence with whom you want. That's the conservative way. And if we have learned any damn thing at this point, is do not trust a Republican. They're lying if they say we're not going to do that. They clearly are going to do that. Pete Stauber should be thrown out of the Minnesota 8th Congressional District. We've got a fantastic candidate up there who's going to fight for women's rights. He's going to fight for gay rights. Going to fight for all Minnesotans in the 8th District. Not like Pete Stauber, who's already... How many gay couples do you think are in the Minnesota 8th District where Pete Stauber has basically said, you know what? Your marriage doesn't mean anything to me. He's not going to care for them. And reminder, Pete Stauber is also a lying jackass who tried to take credit for the infrastructure bill, even though the infrastructure bill was passed without his vote. Lying jackass. No, you need to go up there and fight. The Minnesota 8 is DFL territory. You need to get up there and fight. Because if we allow that seat, these atrocities by Stauber to go unaddressed, well, guess what? Then that's just a failure on our behalf. Real quick, let's go to Josh in Golden Valley. Josh, thanks for holding. Welcome on into the show.
Hi.
Hey.
So I've been hearing you and a lot of hosts talking about, you know, they should really get a law to protect the right to an abortion with all, everything going on lately. And my thought on that, just kind of wondering, you know, up in the air, I'm not going to say I agree or disagree with the whole abortions and everything, but to me, I think if they're going to pass a law like that, they need to remove the sexism out of that and make it like a parent's right to choose. Obviously, a man can't tell a woman that they have to have an abortion, but the vast majority of abortions, in all honesty, are simply people that just don't want to deal with the responsibility of parenthood.
Okay, I'm shutting you down now because you just said one of the stupidest damn things I've heard. No, it's not. It's not just, I'm lazy and I don't want to do it. No. Josh, no. That's not the reality. The reality is, as we heard yesterday, women's health is a big issue. Women's health is a big issue. You know, you cannot, you know, sometimes accidents happen and they don't have the money. They don't have the finances. It's never a simple decision. Only ignorant people that don't want women to have the right to choose will sit there and make the argument as, they're just a bunch of people that are lazy and don't want a kid. Come on, man. Come on. Robert is in Columbia Heights. Wants to chime about Republican overreach. Welcome in, Robert.
Yeah, hi, man. I just wanted to know if the Republicans want to control how we have sex or don't, How are they going to keep screwing us over like they've been doing for the last 40 years?
Beautiful. Lovely job, Robert. I'll give you that one. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate the phone call. Yeah, it's, well, they have certain styles. They just, there's, it's very boring and, you know, bland. Imagine skim milk. That's the kind of, never mind, I won't get into it. I personally like variety and fun, personally. Hey, it's who I am. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Nicely done, man. We take a break, come on back. Don Samuels will join us. It will talk about his campaign. He's running for the Minnesota 5th race against Ilhan Omar in the primary. We'll talk to him when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Our Democrat of the day, we turn to the Minnesota 5 race for the U.S. House seat there. Don Samuels is challenging Ilhan Omar in that race in the primary coming up here in August. He is kind enough today to join us to talk about his campaign and the issues. Don, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Great to be here, Matt.
Thank you very much. The way I always start these interviews off, why don't we take a few minutes here and you can introduce yourself. Who exactly is Don Samuels?
Yes, I'm a family man. I was a single custodial dad. And after my son left for college, left the nest, I married Sandra Samuels. We moved into the Jordan neighborhood in North Minneapolis. And we raised three beautiful girls here, and they also are now grown. I'm also a community leader. 6 days after we moved into our home, a bullet came through our daughter's designated bedroom window. And so we knew we had to organize. And so we got our neighbors together for monthly block club meetings and then expanded from a block to the neighborhood, and we were so effective in dealing with the issues that my neighbors asked me to run for office. Yeah. So I was served three terms on the city council, one term on the school board, and then I'm now CEO of Microgrants, and we make grants to low-income folks to start a career or a business. And also started the Lights On program after Philando was killed. So now when you get pulled over for a broken light, instead of a confrontation, you get a voucher to fix that for free, up to $250. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell. I'm an ordained minister. I'm a person of faith. But my faith shows up in my love for people of all differences and my understanding of the inclusivity of human species, and that we belong to the world and the world belongs to us. We need to take care of it. So that's who I am.
Don, I realize this next question I usually ask is why you got into this race, but really it is tied in. Clearly you felt there was a need to challenge Ilhan Omar in 5. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Why was the decision to enter the race and challenge Ilhan Omar for the primary?
Well, you know, as my short bio implies, my work has been rooted in community. My neighbors asked me to run because we were effective in leading the transformation of our block and in the surrounding block. And then on the city council, I was hands-on, you know, literally like meetings in Cub Food shopping aisle as people came up wanting to talk, setting up a table outside every time at the scene of a homicide or a violent encounters, and making sure that with a banner that said Fifth Ward City Council Mobile Office, and just being totally accessible. Now that stands in contrast to my opponent, who rarely even has town hall meetings and is out of touch with a lot of what the community wants, as she was with the policing issue, where she said to defund when 78% of African Americans didn't want that, and 56% of the voters voted against it. And then in Washington, D.C., she is contrarian in voting against things like the
infrastructure bill, which is going to bring $8 billion to the states. It was one of six Democrats voting against that, going to provide jobs. And then she voted against internationally our policy against Russia, oil sanctions, and against the seizure of the oligarchs' assets, which, you know, is I think she was one of three and then one of four to vote against Democrats to vote against that. And then she was one of just two Democrats to vote against refurbishing the security of the Capitol with additional dollars. And she and the fellow Democrat and all Republicans voted against that. So we need someone in Washington who is going to be a team player, who understands that you don't get anything in Washington done unless you have relationships, and her relationships with the Democratic leadership and the Minnesota delegation is strained.
Don Samuels joining us. He is running against Ilhan Omar in the Minnesota 5 race for the U.S. House seat. Let's focus more back in on the local issues, though. You've got a lot of issues that you're kind of fighting for here. You talked about crime. Obviously there is a crime issue in Minneapolis, as there is in pretty much every major city here. The reality is that it's a complicated, multi-layered problem, which involves, the guns on the street, kids, that are out of control at times, but as well, police that have, looked as more of at times, more of a prison guard over the people as opposed to the police over the people. And I kind of want to talk a little bit more. Why don't you elaborate more on how you want to address that issue? Because that probably is the biggest issue for most people in 5.
And it also demonstrates the difference between me and my opponent, Ilhan Omar, again, because I believe in a both-and approach to this dilemma. We have to deal with the crime. We can't allow people to suffer without protection, because we want to defund the protection that we provide. At the same time, we can't allow the police, who are supposed to protect, to hurt. And so we have to have transformed policing. We can do both. Sophisticated leadership understands that you have to hold the tension of two seemingly opposing ideas at the same time and make it work. And so I have worked as I was the chair of the public safety committee in the city council. We reduced crimes by double digits for 7 years in a row. So crime can be reduced. You have to understand the complex combination of forces that go into crime spiking in the community and work all of them simultaneously. And at the same time, I also, going to support the Amir Lott bill that my opponent proposed in Congress and the George Floyd Policing Act. And I'm going to do both and, not either or.
Your record does speak for itself on dealing with crime in a high crime area, but there are a lot of people, as you talk about George Floyd here, that, and let's bring up Jaleel Stallings, that case, an innocent man who is not only, shot at unannounced, not only was beaten in the street, but then was prosecuted for an additional punishment, even though the people behind it knew he had not done anything wrong, that they had the video evidence that he was innocent.
And everybody should be outraged about all of that.
How do you address? I mean, right now, it seems like the problem that we have in regards to police accountability comes to the fact that the police union has so much power and strength that they don't have to change, and they basically seem to be okay with that. I'm not sure exactly how the DOJ's investigation into the Minneapolis Police Department is going to change things here, but what are some of the ideas that you can have to give more accountability, more visibility, and transparency for the Minneapolis Police?
Well, we have to recruit and hire from the community.
Agreed.
We have to recruit and hire for character and personality. And then we have to train people in non-warrior type training how to defuse rather than exacerbate situations. And then once people are on the street, we have to empower cops, their peers, to report any misconduct or unjust or unethical issues without repercussions in their own career, or without the chief firing that person or disciplining that person and arbitration returning them and restoring them as if nothing happened. That deteriorates the effect of leadership and the impact of leadership on the organization. And then once there we have those things in place, we have to make sure that that we monitor the health of the officers, we monitor their conduct, we monitor the behavior change, we provide support for those who need it, and then we report to the public on a regular basis the changes and improvements that are taking place in the data. And then finally, we need citizen supervision with teeth that can oversee and be a backstop for the system to make sure it's working for the people.
I do want to make sure I make the point here. You're a minister. This would be the Minister of Firefighters. This is a U.S. House race, but at the same time, there's a lot of impact and not only money, political power that you have if you're a House member that you can bring into a district to help with these problems. So even though there's a lot of this, what we're describing right now is a Minneapolis City Council, Mayor Fry sort of issue, that's one of the reasons why I'm bringing it up, because I think it has to. We clearly have enough problems where it has to go from the federal politicians we have all the way down to the local council members, and I think it's a complete team effort to try to fix things. That's why I bring that up.
Absolutely. Beautiful. It's true, and it's not just Minnesota. It's a national issue, and every city, country, in a city has their own police department, so we need some federal laws that kind of set a basic floor of conduct for police officers so that it's not left up to potentially dysfunctional police departments around the country.
I know you talk a lot about crime and these issues here. Let's talk about some of the other issues that you're looking to talk about. Enhancing economic opportunity and prosperity. This is obviously something that it's always been a little bit of a mystery. How do you basically, in areas that need growth, that they need, economic ventures, new businesses, the support businesses like grocery stores, gas stations, stuff like this, how do you work to get that economic growth and prosperity across the board in five?
Yeah, that's why public safety is so important. We've got people on Lake Street who are still fearful because they're getting robbed again and again and again, and the number of cops is just not enough to be preventive in any kind of way, just responding to crime and sometimes only to violent crime. And so we have to get the safety issue. It's totally related. They say economic development curbs crime, and crime curbs economic development. And so public safety is not just about I want to walk around the block without getting jumped. It's about I want to invest my hard-earned savings in this street, on this block, because the demand is there, but I don't want to take the risk. So public safety. But then again, in addition to that, we have to have an educated workforce, right? That is young people who are able to work productively and not be a deterrent to safety on our streets. So we got to get our workforce prepared for 21st century jobs, and we have to make sure that wages are livable and that people are not having to resort to alternative industries.
One final question about your policies, the issues you want to champion. You yourself, it's the number one issue on your page, protecting reproductive rights. You are basically, obviously, like a lot of Democrats, the overturning of Roe v. Wade has lit a fire under this issue, and this is something that we have to strive to make sure that it gets codified in federal law.
Absolutely, and this is an issue in which I believe strongly, and also the rights of LGBT community. We need to move into the 21st century on this issue, as in many others. The Democrats have their foot on the gas, and the Republicans have their foot on the brakes. And it's time for us, because the brakes are, it's not just the Democrats. It's the general public that has its foot on the gas. Over 70% of the folks, the people in the country, in this country, want choice. And over 90% want sensible gun laws. So the people have our feet on the gas. The Democrats are providing leadership on that. And we need to stay strong because we know we're with the general public and the voters.
Don Samuels, once again, he's Democrat running in the primary against Ilhan Omar, Minnesota fifth race here. Don, I want to send people to your website if they'd like to find out more about you, find out more about the issues. What's the website people should go visit?
DonSamuels.com. And while there, you can volunteer, donate. There are options to volunteer. Learn more about me and why I am, in fact, a progressive and pragmatic Democrat who's sacrificed generational wealth by not ever making money off real estate because I made a commitment to college to always live in a low-income community. That's as far left as you can get. And I'm out there and saying, let's deal with the disparities in our country. And my website will tell you all about the character of this candidate.
DonSamuels.com, DonSamuels.com, DonSamuels.com. I'll link to everything a little bit later on the Twitter and the Facebook, as well as also we'll spotlight this interview. Don, I appreciate
it. And August 9th, don't forget, August 9th is the primary. Mm-hmm. The contest you're talking about is decided on August 9th, not in December. So go vote in the primary on August 9th.
Or not November. No, it is. This is the primary. August 9th. That's when this election happens. So this one's coming down the line here. August 9th is the primary. Once again, educate yourself. Find out about the issues. Go to Don Samuels' webpage and read up about it. DonSamuels.com. Don, I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much for being Democrat of the Day.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care. Don Samuels joining us. We'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I am not here to tell you who to vote for. That is not on the Democrat side. Don't vote for a Republican, for God's sakes. They're lying their butts off. They're horrible human beings. Don't vote Republican. But when it comes to Democrats, comes to primaries, or comes to the Hennepin County Attorney's race, I'm not going to get involved there. You have to be an educated voter. It's on you to go and talk to these people. And, I mean, I got to tell you the truth is that this is my year. I'm not in this district anymore. I was Minnesota 5. I got redistricted in with Dean Phillips. He's going to be my congressman now. Because he's not going to lose. I think can we call that race? I mean, it's early. It's early for November, but can we call that race yet? No? All right.
I don't even know who's running on the Republican side.
I don't know either. They've abandoned a lot of the metro area at this point.
The third. Yeah.
Well, and take a look at Tyler Kistner down in 2. They talk about another district they don't seem to really be trying too hard to hold. They're just – everything's on 8 right now. 1 and 8. That's it for them. Anyway, but I'm not here to tell you who to vote for. Go educate yourself. DonSamuels.com, that's his website. Ilhan Omar, you've been my representative. I've been fairly happy with you, but, you know, that's not for me to decide for anyone else. You want to come on the show, I'd love to have you on as Democrat of the Day. You're more than welcome to. And that's kind of the way I do it. So go educate yourself. Read up on the issues, make the determination, and vote. Vote, 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 vote. August 9th is the primary, and November is the general election. 952-946-6205. All right. Just because I can. Narcs. A number of Minnesota cities are temporarily banning THC edibles. What? You mean after the Republicans accidentally made them legal in Minnesota, now they want to ban them? Narcs. The law went into effect at the beginning of the month. The caught with our pants down, I mean, the legislation, has led to some interesting consequences. Within the last week, St. Joseph in central Minnesota and Marshall in western Minnesota approved moratoriums to halt the manufacturing and sales of hemp-derived edibles. Stillwater officials implemented a one-year moratorium last November. Well, before lawmakers accidentally passed the new law, Republicans, that is, as a way to be ahead of the state when it legalized recreational marijuana, and two other cities, Waite Park and Prior Lake, are considering moratoriums. Dude, man, come on. Are you against fun? Relaxing? Netflix? I mean, you got to live on there. Getting edibles, man. Narcs. We're not saying we hate weed, said Ted Kozlowski, Stillwater mayor. We're just trying to be smart about it. Okay. The temporary prohibitions. One thing you could do is put a local sales tax on it. I'm just saying. You know, there's two ways to go about it. Stop people from having fun or allow people to have fun and, hey, let's get some money for fixing some roads and stuff. And scene. I'm just saying. I don't know. Can they add taxes on that? Do we know what the tax rules are for a local municipality on
that?
It's
kind of a gray area on that. In the light of everything being passed, yeah, there's a lot we don't know.
I think hotels change per – you can do hotels per town.
Yeah, it would make sense. Yeah, to your point. Yeah, I mean, you can put it on everything else, so why not on
– Is it tax-free like clothing at the Mall of America or something like that? Because that would really be – Democrats, if you got the Republicans to make it tax-free, wow, you did a great job, man. Nicely done. The temporary prohibitions are meant to give the city staff time to research the issue and draft ordinances that regulate manufacturing and the sale of the edibles. The new law allows Minnesotans 21 and older to buy edibles and beverages containing small amounts of it, the THC, the marijuana plant's main psychoactive ingredient. It quite honestly caught a lot of us off guard, said David Bertrand, a White Waite Park police chief. Really didn't see this coming. Have input or anything before it came along. Well, you might want to talk to your Republican that was representing you because they didn't either, apparently, when this thing got up to them. On Monday, Waite Park City Council considered approving a moratorium, but instead decided to table the discussion to wait to see how other St. Cloud area cities are handling regulations. I do believe totally that this is an, I'm going to be using my own words, evil that's going to come, said Rick Miller, Waite Park mayor, about recreational marijuana. But I also believe, I think it's a perfect example of where six cities should get together, and if they want to make an ordinance, we all should be mirrored. Or you just can make it legal. Because it's legal now. Oh, I can't go here? Let me drive a mile. Hey, guess what? It's legal here. Yay!
And that city makes tax money.
And they make tax money. So, yay! Hey, make smart decision, kids. All right. That's all I'm going to say. We got Devil's Radio up next, Native Roots Radio at 6. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.